Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Pete Musto, Jill Robbins, and Brian Lynn. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, two companies have announced plans to make a film about the rescue of 12 boys and their soccer coach from a flooded cave last year. The team was trapped underground in northern Thailand for more than 2 weeks. The American video streaming service Netflix is joining with SK Global Entertainment to create the film. They made the announcement Tuesday in Bangkok. SK Global is the production company that produced the movie Crazy Rich Asians. It and Netflix received the rights to the cave rescue story from 13 Tam Luang Company Limited. The Thai government helped establish 13 Tam Luang to represent the interests of the boys and their coach. Thailand's culture ministry first announced the film deal as a television miniseries in March. A government official said at the time that the families of the cave survivors would each be paid about $94,000. The boys of the Wild Boars soccer team and their coach had planned to explore the Tam Luang cave area after a practice event on June 23, 2018. But rainwater flooded the passageways, trapping them inside. It was not known at the time if they were able to find shelter from rising floodwaters that poured in after unexpected rainfall. On July 2nd, two British divers found the boys and their coach. An international team of experienced cave divers rescued the group. The divers joined with Thai Navy divers in a complex and dangerous operation that ended successfully on July 10th. Ekapol Chantawang was the team's assistant coach, who was among those trapped underground. He told reporters, "We are grateful for the opportunity to thank the people and organizations from Thailand and around the world who came together to perform a true miracle by retelling our story. We look forward to working with all involved parties to ensure our story is told accurately so that the world can recognize, once again, the heroes that made the rescue operation a success."
Electric scooters are everywhere in cities across the United States. They are one of the most popular forms of shared transportation. And they often anger people who must share the roads and sidewalks with them. The scooters have become even more popular than station-based bicycles. Bicycles that must be left at specific locations. A new report by the National Association of City Transportation Officials notes that in 2018, Americans took around 38.5 million trips on shared electric scooters. In comparison, riders only took 36.5 million trips on shared station-based bicycles.
More Americans, with the help of their smartphones, are exploring alternatives to car ownership. They are using other devices, such as shared scooters and bikes, to get around. This is known as the micro-mobility revolution, leading many companies to compete for the business. Bird is a California scooter company that began in late 2017. It has raised $418 million and had more than 10 million rides in its first year. Lime, which offers both shared bikes and scooters, had more than 12 million rides and $467 million in investment in its first 15 months. Even automobile companies are getting involved in the micro-mobility business. The car-sharing service Uber bought Jump Bikes, an electric bike and scooter company. Last year, it invested $30 million in Lime. Ford, a car manufacturer, bought scooter company Spin in November. Sunny Madra is vice president of Ford's mobility businesses. In an interview with the Associated Press, he noted that working on micromobility services could have benefits for the company in the future. This is a great way for us to make sure that we're part of the transformation of mobility, he said.
If it seems like electric scooters appeared overnight in America, that is because they did. Several companies distributed them throughout cities without permission or permits. However, U.S. cities are now requiring scooter companies to share their location data. This data shows where the scooters are and which routes they take. That information can be valuable to plan bike routes and docking stations or to understand traffic patterns. But the data also raises questions about user privacy. Regina Clulo is the head of Populous, a company that works with cities on data and privacy issues. She notes that some people are concerned about privacy because if you take enough GPS data points and begin attaching other data sets, the information can be used to identify specific individuals.
I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm Pete Musto.
Facial recognition technology is increasingly being used today in many places in the United States and overseas. Such systems use machine learning tools to scan faces in an attempt to recognize particular individuals. Many police agencies across the world have long used facial recognition technology to search for and help catch criminals. The technology has also been used at some U.S. airports to help confirm the identity of passengers and get them on flights. It is also used to unlock phones or other electronic devices, and in some cases, even cars. Some robots use facial recognition to recognize the people it is communicating with. Now, a similar technology, known as facial detection, is entering a new field, the business of advertising. Facial recognition technology is meant to identify a specific individual. Facial detection systems aim to detect the presence of a person and try to predict some facts about them. In the United States, such systems are currently being tested in a small number of stores. Businesses use cameras set up inside the stores or public area. The cameras scan the faces of individuals and predict their age and sex. Some systems are also designed to judge a person's emotions. That information can then be used to target people with real-time advertisements on video screens during their visit to the store. Several of these systems were demonstrated earlier this year at a gathering of the National Retail Federation, the Associated Press reports. One facial detection system developed by a company called Mood Media aims to judge a person's happiness or fear level. Businesses could use such information to get real-time reactions from people as they look at products or video ads in the store. Such a system could also be used as part of a company's efforts to test the popularity of specific products. Another company, Cineplex Digital Media, showed off a camera-powered system designed for use in retail businesses, on the street, or at bus stops. The company says its product can detect things like whether someone is wearing eyeglasses or has facial hair. That information could then be used to target those people with ads for new glasses or shaving equipment. Such systems could also be used by restaurants to send ads to people driving up for window service. If the camera recognizes a large vehicle, for example, the system could send an ad for a family-sized meal. Facial detection technology has reportedly also been placed inside large billboard signs at Westfield centers in Australia and New Zealand. Britain's The Guardian newspaper reported there are currently more than 1,600 camera-equipped billboards at more than 40 of the company's retail centers. Quiviti, a French-based company, developed the billboard system. The signs are equipped with cameras with the ability to detect information about people in crowds. Quiviti claims the system can correctly predict a person's sex at least 90% of the time, The Guardian reported. It is also designed to detect a person's age and five levels of emotion, from very happy to very unhappy. Some privacy groups have criticized the use of such facial detection systems. Pam Dixon heads the World Privacy Forum, a not-for-profit group that researches privacy issues. The creepy factor here is definitely a 10 out of 10, she told the AP. Dixon added that the technology could lead to some discriminatory methods. For example, a business could raise the price of a product or service based on a person's age. Or it could target a person with an ad for an antidepressant drug if the individual appears to have a sad facial expression. We shouldn't be gathering the emotional state of anyone, Dixon said. One company testing the technology in two of its U.S. stores is large food retailer Kroger. The company told the AP its cameras aim to predict a shopper's age and sex. But Kroger said the personal information is anonymous and not stored away. Quiviti, the maker of Westfield's billboard system, says on its website that it only stores anonymous information that describes the size and the demographics of an audience. The company added that it does not keep any identifiable information about people and does not record any images or video. Supporters of the technology say it could improve the buyer's experience by drawing attention to products they might like or by offering them special deals. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. There were many changes in the social customs and day-to-day life of millions of Americans during the administration of President Calvin Coolidge. Many young people began to challenge the traditions of their parents and grandparents. They experimented with new ideas and ways of living. People of all kinds became interested in the new popular culture. Radio and films brought them exciting news of court trials, sports heroes, and wild parties. The 1920s also was one of the most active and important periods for the more serious arts. Writers, painters, and other artists produced some of the greatest work in the nation's history. Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe take a look at American arts during this exciting period.
Most Americans approved strongly of the economic growth and improved living conditions during the 1920s. They supported the conservative Republican policies of President Calvin Coolidge, and they had great faith in the country's business leaders and economic system. However, many of the nation's serious artists had a different and darker view of society. They were troubled deeply by the changes they saw. They believed that Americans had become too interested in money and wealth. These artists rejected the new business society, and they also questioned the value of politics. Many of them believed that the First World War in Europe had been a terrible mistake. These artists had little faith in the political leaders who came to power after the war. They felt a need to protest the way the world was changing around them.
The spirit of protest was especially strong in serious American writing during the 1920s. Many of the greatest writers of this period hated the new business culture. One such writer was Sinclair Lewis. He was the first American to win the Nobel Prize for Literature. Lewis wrote about Americans living in the towns and villages in the central part of the United States. Many of the people in his books were foolish men and women with empty values. They chased after money and popularity. In his famous book, Main Street. Lewis joked about and criticized small-town business owners. Social criticism also was central to the writing of the newspaper writer H.L. Mencken from the eastern city of Baltimore. Mencken considered most Americans to be stupid and violent fools. He attacked their values without mercy. Of course, many traditional Americans reacted strongly to such criticism. For example, some religious and business leaders attacked Mencken as a dangerous person whose words were treason against the United States. But many young people thought Mencken was a hero whose only crime was writing the truth.
The work of Lewis, Mencken, and a number of other writers of the 1920s has been forgotten by many Americans as the years have passed. But the period did produce some truly great writing. One of the greatest writers of these years was Ernest Hemingway. Hemingway wrote about love, war, sports, and other subjects. He used short sentences and rough words. His style was sharper and different from traditional American writing, and his strong views about life set him apart from most other Americans. Another major writer was F. Scott Fitzgerald. Fitzgerald wrote especially about rich Americans searching for happiness and new values. His books were filled with people who rejected traditional beliefs. His book, The Great Gatsby, is considered today to be one of the greatest works in the history of American writing. A third great writer of the 1920s was William Faulkner. Faulkner wrote about the special problems and ways of life in the American South. His books explored the emotional tension in a society still suffering from the loss of the Civil War 60 years before. Some of Faulkner's best books were The Sound and the Fury, As I Lay Dying, and Absalom, Absalom. Like Hemingway, he won the Nobel Prize for Literature.
The 1920s also produced the greatest writer of theater plays in American history, Eugene O'Neill. O'Neill was an Irish-American with a dark and violent view of human nature. His plays used new theatrical methods and ways of presenting ideas, but they carried an emotional power never before seen in the American theater. Some of his best-known plays were Morning Becomes Electra, The Iceman Cometh, and A Long Day's Journey Into Night. A number of American writers also produced great poetry during the 1920s. Probably the most famous work was The Wasteland, a poem of sadness by the writer T.S. Eliot.
There also were important changes in American painting during the 1920s. Economic growth gave many Americans the money to buy art for their homes for the first time. 60 new museums opened. Slowly, Americans learned about serious art. Actually, American art had been changing in important ways since the beginning of the century. In 1908, a group of New York artists arranged a historic show. These artists tried to show real life in their paintings. They painted new kinds of subjects. For example, George Bellows painted many emotional and realistic pictures of the sport of boxing. His work and the painting of other realistic artists became known as the Ashcan School of Art. Another important group of modern artists was led by the great photographer Alfred Stieglitz. This group held a major art show in 1913 in New York, Chicago, and Boston. The show presented modern art from Europe. Americans got their first chance to see the work of such painters as Pablo Picasso and Georges Braque. The show caused a huge public debate in the United States. Traditional art critics accused the organizers of the show of trying to overthrow Christianity and American values. Former President Theodore Roosevelt and others denounced the new art as a threat to the country. However, many young American painters and art lovers did not agree. They became very interested in the new art styles from Europe. They studied them closely. Soon, Charles DeMuth, Joseph Stella, and other American painters began to produce excellent art in the new Cubist style. John Marin painted beautiful views of sea coasts in New York and Maine, and such artists as Max Weber and Georgia O'Keeffe painted in styles that seemed to come more from their own imagination than from reality. As with writing, the work of many of these serious modern painters only became popular many years later.
The greatest American designer of buildings during the 1920s was Frank Lloyd Wright. Wright believed that architects should design a building to fit its location, not to copy some ancient style. He used local materials in new ways. Wright invented many imaginative methods to combine useful building design with natural beauty. But again, most Americans did not know of Wright's work. Instead, they turned to local architects with traditional beliefs. These architects generally designed old and safe styles for buildings, for homes, offices, colleges, and other needs.
Writers and artists now look back at the roaring 1920s as an extremely important period that gave birth to many new styles and ideas. Hemingway's style of writing continues to influence American writers. Many painters say the period marked the real birth of modern American art. And architecture students in the United States and other countries now study the buildings of Frank Lloyd Wright. The changes in American society caused many of these artists much sadness and pain in their personal lives. But their expression of protest and rich imagination produced a body of work that has grown in influence with the passing years.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.